It's the morning show. I'm Molly Stentz. No one quite describes the drying up of a small town like the musician Greg Brown.
The summer's full of thunder, the kids run and play. Mama got a new wrinkle, Papa ain't got much to say. Rust grows along the railroad track. The young folks leave, they don't come back. And I don't have to read the news or hear it on the radio. I see it in the faces of everyone I know. The boards go up, the signs come down. And what's gonna happen to our little town?
We're talking about our declining rural populations this morning. The new census numbers are in, and they confirm what many people already know. We're losing people in many small towns across the state. When jobs leave and young people leave, the downward spiral begins. Towns find their back tax base is dwindling. They have to cut back or consolidate their school districts. It becomes harder to keep people around. More cutbacks. How do we reverse this trend? We're talking about it this morning. We're at 1-800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org. Rick Barrett is a business reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he has dug into the census numbers, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Rick.
Hi, good morning, Molly.
Glad you could be with us. So, hey, you reviewed the latest census numbers showing the depopulation across Wisconsin's rural counties. How bad is it?
That's a really good question, Molly. The answer will vary quite a bit. I mean, the state's overall population grew about 3.6% to nearly 6 million people, but nearly 30% of the counties in the state, mostly in rural areas, lost residents. And that's where it seems to be the concern. If you look at the 21 Wisconsin counties that lost population, most would be considered rural. There's no uniform definition of the term, but a lot of times it's defined as a place lacking a metro area of around 50,000 people. So those are the counties that seem to be losing the most people.
And which parts of the state are we talking about?
Yeah, if you look at the counties that lost the most population, you could kind of paint a picture of northern Wisconsin, north central Wisconsin, but it's not uniform. Richland County saw the greatest drop, 4% of its population, but it's in the southwest part of the state. And then Rusk and Taylor counties each lost around 3.8% of their population. Crawford County was at 3.2%. So you've got counties both in the north and in the southwest part of the state that seem to be the ones that are losing the most.
And what do you think accounts for this?
There are all kinds of reasons. If you look at the employment is a key part of it. I mean, rural Wisconsin has so many small businesses, and they're the lifeblood of Wisconsin. You can't understate how important they are. But still, without large employers, without companies that employ hundreds of people, folks have to drive farther and farther for work, and so that's where rural Wisconsin is at a disadvantage. Without large employers, it's more difficult to draw people and keep them there.
Sure. Where do we find that people are moving to when they're leaving smaller rural agricultural communities?
Yeah, the counties that seem to do the best were the ones that kind of had a hub nearby, whether it be, Eau Claire, whether it be La Crosse, where there's a pretty good, decent-sized city within driving distance for work. That was a key factor. And interesting, too, in terms of growth goes, some of the counties that gained residents, I mean, St. Croix, for instance, that's closer to the Twin Cities, so that would explain part of that. But sure. Sawyer and Door and Bayfield and Vilas, they don't have a significant city of any size, and they all had growth.
Sure, sure. And so, yeah, I noticed that in northern Wisconsin, those counties that are close to Lake Superior, they rely a lot on tourism. I also wonder about the role of the internet, since they tend to have a really strong internet providers in those counties. How much of a factor do you think that is in these numbers?
I think it is a pretty strong factor, Molly. If you look at Bayfield County and Vilas County, for example, part of that could be from what's almost called like the COVID effect, where people were moving there to get away from the cities. They wanted to be in a less crowded area, and they could do that because the internet providers have really stepped up their game there. You're able to work from, your summer home in Bayfield County or Vilas County, just as if you were in the city. So I think it has made a pretty significant difference.
Right. You profiled in your recent reporting couples that were essentially fleeing larger cities and the rising costs, particularly housing costs, and finding they could telecommute just fine from smaller rural areas as long as there was a solid internet provider.
Yeah, they could, and that's worked out well for a lot of folks. And there are also people who are just moving because they want a change of life, too. I mean, they're looking for a little slower pace, a little more relaxed lifestyle, and the rural communities are drawing them there for that. You've got places like Sawyer County that's in the northern part of the state. They had about a 9% gain in population in the census. Well, that's kind of interesting because the internet service is not all that great in Sawyer County, but yet they have the Birkebeiner cross country ski race. They've got the Chequamegon fat tire bicycle race. They have a whole culture there for hunting and fishing that draws a lot of people to the area. And many of those folks have just decided they'd like to call that home. So, there are all kinds of reasons why people will move to rural areas.
We're speaking with Rick Barrett, business reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Rick, what was the most surprising thing that you saw in the census data?
I think for me, the most surprising thing was the degree of decline in some of these rural counties and some of the small towns is really disturbing. When you drive through, the numbers don't tell the whole story. When you drive through some of these smaller towns, you can really see it. And that's really disturbing.
And I wonder what implications this has for the state. I mean, one could say, and for many people that perhaps grew up in small towns and couldn't wait to get away to find other opportunities, to explore the world, maybe have more job prospects, I could hear some people saying, so what? People are going to go where the options are, where the opportunities are. That's a story as old as time. People growing up and wanting to get away from their parents or their communities that they've known so well. Is it a problem that people move away?
Yeah, it's going to matter for a lot of different reasons. I don't think any state in the country wants to have its economy and its cultural life built on, two or three different hubs and say, well, that's it. And the rest of the state is just kind of a backwater place. That's not a healthy formula for growth or for anything in terms of a state's future. So you want to have a healthy economy. You want to have good schools. You want to have good medical care and all sorts of reasons for people to live not only in two or three places, but across the entire state. I mean, I think it just makes sense that, we keep our rural areas thriving.
We're speaking this morning with Rick Barrett, business reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. This is The Morning Show. I'm Molly Stenz. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stenz. We're unpacking the census results this morning with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Rick Barrett. We're looking at population declines across much of rural Wisconsin. What things do you think rural counties in Wisconsin need to do to attract younger residents? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-642-1234. You can also drop us an email, ideas@wpr.org. Well, Rick, you were talking about some of the things that counties and rural areas are doing, particularly in Sawyer, to reverse the trend, right? To develop a niche, if you will, a focus on recreation, outdoor sports that draw so many people to the area. What are some other strategies you see counties employing to reverse the trend?
You know, right now, I think a lot of the rural counties are focused on broadband, and because it's the linchpin for, you know, rural businesses as well as growth. I mean, farmers need it to buy equipment, follow crop prices. You can't have a small factory unless they can connect with their suppliers and their customers. I mean, health centers, tourism businesses, you know, kids who are studying from home, parents who are working from home these days, just about everybody needs broadband. Without that, you're not going to see growth, period. So, long-winded answer to your question, I think broadband is a key.
Sure. And we've seen the feds and the state distribute grants, try to direct some investment around the state to communities. How quickly will we see the effects of this?
This year is going to be a pretty big difference. There's a lot of money that's being poured into it, both at a state and federal level. And with the White House's infrastructure plan, it could be stepped up even more. The next couple of years could be a huge difference. But it depends on how the money is spent. If it's spent wisely, you know, we could see all sorts of changes. If it just goes to the areas that probably would have received better service anyway, then not so much.
Well, Rick, we have a caller waiting to speak with you. Let's go to the phones now and talk to Fred from Beaver Dam. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. I really had a comment more than anything. This show was set up telling us about the percentages of increase and decline in various counties in Wisconsin, and then we went on to talk about what that meant. But by using percentages to talk about this, to compare counties by percentages, is useless if you don't use the actual numbers. Certainly a loss in population in Richland County of 2 or 3% can't be compared to a gain in Dane County of 1%. You have to know what the numbers are, and by not telling them, you make this all a foolish exercise.
All right, Fred. Rick, do you have some numbers handy?
Sure. We have all kinds of numbers. I would respectfully disagree that it's a foolish exercise because, you know, growth in a rural area is entirely different than growth in a metro area. So it's almost apples and oranges. So I think percentages are relevant. But, yeah, but we've got all kinds of numbers.
It gets a little...
I mean, Dane County...
Yeah, it gets a little tricky on the radio to start spewing out population numbers for all of our 72 counties. But, yeah, Dane County.
Yeah, we have them. I mean, Dane County saw the greatest growth. And again, by percentage, it was 15%. Went from 488,073 in 2010 to 561,584 in 2020. So there's your 15% growth. that's a huge increase. If you want to look at declines, Milwaukee County went from 947,735. No, I'm sorry. Went from 939,489, which is about a 1% decrease. So that's another example of a metro area. When you're looking at increases, Bayfield County, which we just talked about, they went from 15,000 roughly to 16,220 in the 2020 census. So you could argue, well, that's just a little over 1,000 people. But for that area, that's significant. That's 1,000 year-round residents in a community that only has 16,000 people.
Exactly. And people feel the impacts. I was in Bayfield last week, and people were talking about this, talking about the growth that they're seeing in the area. Excitedly so. But as you mentioned, they can feel the impact. I have another caller coming in. We have a comment actually from Kurt in DeSoto. He says that city people come in and buy up homes in small towns. They fix them up. They pay taxes, but they don't bring any kids, and they fight against growth. And he says rural communities really aren't gaining anything from them except the tax dollars. He's worried that they're not leaving housing for the next generation with which to attract new people to the community. What do you think about that argument?
I think he makes some very good points. A lack of housing is definitely an issue. It's that classic conundrum where, new homes won't be built unless people are moving into an area, but a lot of times they won't come in unless there are new affordable places to live. And, his point about older people moving in, I think that tax base is important, but for how many years, are they going to be able to contribute? And without young families coming in, you're not going to have growth.
Yeah. We've got another caller for you. We will go next to Milwaukee, and we have Hannah joining us. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
I just wanted to bring up why a lot of people that I know wouldn't consider moving to a rural area or moving back to a rural area. And it has a lot to do with social issues. Most of the people that I know are looking to raise kids in a diverse environment. A lot of people are, members of the LGBTQ community. And there's a perception, and sometimes unfortunately a reality, that smaller towns and rural areas aren't necessarily going to be as open or as inclusive, or, they're looking for a little more cultural diversity that a lot of these areas just don't really have or aren't really known for. Regardless of jobs, regardless of broadband, if someone doesn't feel like they're going to be safe or accepted or, be able to make friends in an area, they're not going to move there.
That's a key point, Hannah. Thank you. Rick, what do you think?
I think she makes a very valid point. People will not want to live in a community where they don't feel welcomed and where they don't feel like there are other people similar to them in the community. It does take a little bit of a nucleus to get things going. If you don't have people who are your friends, in that community, you're not going to stick around for very long.
Yeah. So what, we've just got a moment left here, but what policy implications do you think these numbers bring up or we could see coming out of these numbers?
I think there's a lot at stake here, Molly, whether it's the schools and the state aid that they receive, whether it's the tax base for all kinds of county services, whether it's the workforce, in terms of being able to support businesses and growth. There's just so much at stake here. It feels to me like the legislature ought to make this a high priority.
Well, Rick Barrett, we are about out of time, but I want to thank you for your reporting and for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on, Molly.
We have been speaking with Rick Barrett, business reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Up next is news and a story of our Wisconsin life. Then we'll talk with Common Council President Cavalier Johnson of Milwaukee, who's in line to take over as acting Milwaukee mayor when and if Tom Barrett is confirmed as the U.S. ambassador to Luxembourg. I'm Molly Stentz. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's contributor Catherine Jago with a story about watching chimney swifts at dusk.
We all have a lot of things to cross off our to-do list. Have you taken out the trash? Are the bills paid? Laundry folded? And if you're writer Catherine Jago, have you paused and turned your gaze skyward at dusk to witness the dance of the chimney swifts?
On August 31st, I hear that the chimney swifts are roosting in the brick chimney at Our Lady Queen of Peace Church. At summer's end, swifts mass in great flocks at dusk as they prepare to migrate south. My husband and I resolved to go there after dinner. It isn't an auspicious evening, cloudy and spitting with rain. We're bickering as we get into the car, anxious we'll be late. We arrive at 7:10, and I scurry ahead, clutching my binoculars, in search of the right chimney. I see nothing in the sky. We come to an expansive parking lot at the back of the church. Some minivans have pulled up, and people are sitting next to them on lawn chairs, chatting companionably. Two women are lying face up in an empty paddling pool. There are kids of various ages tooling around on the blacktop on bicycles and scooters, impervious to the drizzle. We join a small knot of birders gathered around an elderly gentleman in a wheelchair, wearing a tweed hat with a plaid woolen blanket tucked around his knees. I see only two swifts, tiny and high up. They look like cigars on wings, with the same rapid fluttering as bats or scraps of burned paper. But as the minutes pass, they multiply as if conjured out of the air. Now I can hear their high, sweet chittering. For a while, they swirl around in all directions, but gradually they cohere into loose ovals, the skein bulging this way, then that, above the rooftops. The old man is as excited as a boy. "Mother and I never saw this many," he exclaims, pointing skyward with a tremulous forefinger, his enthusiasm infectious. "Another first. Pretty good for a 91-year-old, his daughter says, affectionately. I keep checking my watch. Our necks begin to ache, gazing up. Sunset is at 7:34, although tonight it's only a glow in the dense cloud. As 7:30 approaches, the chimney seems to exert a magnetic attraction. Individual swifts dive towards it. Most pull out of the turn and veer off, but the odd one vanishes. At 1 minute before sunset, the flock's loose swirling picks up energy, like water circling around a drain, and suddenly they're pouring themselves down the chimney as if down a funnel and vanishing. I imagine the commotion inside the chimney, hundreds of small birds jockeying for a perch on the masonry with their tiny claws. I wonder if they prefer certain spots, higher up or lower down, and how they all get into such a tight space without colliding or hurting one another. When all of them are gone, there is soft applause. Someone says, "Sleep well, guys." I stand leaning into my husband, who has his arms around me from behind. When I turn around, people are dotted all over the parking lot in twos and threes, staring up, smiling. They have appeared out of nowhere, like the swifts. It wasn't a spectacular sunset, or a spectacular number of birds, 300 or 400 at most. But there's a collective sense of peace and pleasure. I resolve to come back at dusk, whenever I can, before they leave.
Catherine Jago is a translator and writer whose most recent poetry collections are Bloodroot and News from the North. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. Milwaukee could be headed for a period of change. Tom Barrett announced last week that he's been tapped to become the next ambassador of Luxembourg, a small European country nestled between France and Germany. After nearly two decades as mayor, Barrett signaled he's ready for a change.
As a lifelong Milwaukeean, I will bring the values of our community to this new posting. Values we share such as hard work, honesty, and caring for others.
Barrett's been mayor since 2004. This move opens doors for any number of people seeking the job and could mark a new direction for the city. Barrett is awaiting confirmation by the U.S. Senate, and if that goes through, the man at the helm of Milwaukee will be Cavalier Johnson. Cavalier Johnson is the president of the Milwaukee Common Council, District 2 Alderman. He would serve as acting mayor until an election could be held, and he joins us now. What does the next Milwaukee mayor need to focus on? We'd love to hear from you this morning. 1-800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org. Good morning, Cavalier Johnson.
Good morning, Molly. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm so glad you could be with us this morning. So as acting mayor, what would your top priorities be for Milwaukee?
Well, again, good morning, and thank you for having me. As acting mayor, there are a number of things that we really need to dig into and focus on right away. Chief among them are issues around reckless driving. We've seen in this community far too often that people make the choice to get behind the wheel of a vehicle, drive recklessly, and the results are catastrophic. You know, people have lost their lives over the course of the past number of weeks, including a number of incidents that have happened in my district, 60th and Hampton, on 76th and Silver Spring, and recently where not students from the school, but over at Marshall High School, individuals have decided to get in vehicles and drive over the lawns while school's letting out, endangering the lives of all those students there. So that certainly is at the front, on the front burner, and something that we need to address in terms of public safety. The other thing that I think is top of mind that we really need to focus on is getting more shots in the arms of people for COVID. Look, Molly, right now we've got the best tool possible to take on and defeat COVID, and that's vaccination. And so we need to do all that we can to push more people to get vaccinated so that we can make sure that life gets back to normal for everybody in our community.
So I want to follow up with you on that. On the reckless driving point, I mean, what can the city do about that? What are you suggesting?
Sure. Well, there are a number of things that the city can do. Some can have an immediate impact. Some will happen over time. For instance, in the years that have passed, we worked to re-implement universal driver education back into Milwaukee Public Schools. Now, that doesn't solve things today, but over time, it gives opportunities for young people in particular to have some foundations in driving so that they have better skill sets when they get on the road and they're not self-taught or being taught to drive by somebody who was once self-taught many years ago. So that's one. Another thing that we can do is work with the Department of Public Works and use curb extensions and bump outs, change the built infrastructure, the built environment to stop people from driving recklessly. Sort of an approach that says, take the toys away, you know, from folks that are making the decision to drive recklessly and endanger lives in our community. Another thing is enforcement, and I joined the police chief, Jeff Norman, just earlier this year. I believe it was in February or March, as he launched a traffic safety unit within the Milwaukee Police Department. These are officers dedicated all day, every day, to enforcing traffic law in Milwaukee. And since that time that they launched, they've given out, you know, some 12,000 or so ticket citations to people who are driving recklessly on our streets. So there are a number of things that we can do and should do, a number of things that we have done, and a number of things that we should continue to do.
And on the COVID front, what needs to happen as far as raising the vaccination rate? What's your plan?
That's an excellent question. And I want to first applaud the mayor's administration. I think that certainly myself and other members of the County Council were pushing and asking for the administration to implement something like was announced a couple of weeks ago, where employees in the city of Milwaukee must be vaccinated. We were followed just recently by Milwaukee County, where the county executive announced that Milwaukee County employees must receive vaccination as well. And I think that the government's stepping up to be leaders in this respect can encourage private businesses also to do the same thing, to get their employees vaccinated. And if we do that, then we create an environment in our community where more and more people have received vaccinations, making our community safer for everybody else. So we need to continue doing that. We need to continue going down a line of getting vaccinations out with these mobile clinics that we've done in the past. Just in the past number of weeks, myself and some of my colleagues in the County Council have done vaccine clinics at churches and at community festivals, at Mexican Fiesta, the health department was at, and delivered a number of vaccinations in the arms as well. So we need to be on the ground getting vaccinations into the arms of people all across our city.
Well, until that happens, should Milwaukee have a mask mandate?
Well, that's something that we're discussing right now. I would hate to get in front of the health commissioner because that's where the expertise is in terms of whether or not we ought to do that. I know there are concerns with the transmission that's happened recently in our community, and it is troubling. But I want to make sure that we're walking in the same direction, the same line as our health department. I think that it's probably not appropriate for, you know, politicians to make that call, and people who are in the health field, namely the people that we confirm to lead our health systems in the city of Milwaukee, should be the ones that are stepping up to the forefront, mm-hmm. giving their direction and helping us to make that decision.
We're speaking this morning with Milwaukee Common Council President Cavalier Johnson. He's the man who will take over as acting mayor when and if Mayor Barrett leaves office before the end of his term. What do you think the next Milwaukee mayor needs to focus on? We're at 1-800-642-1234. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz. We're speaking with Milwaukee Common Council President Cavalier Johnson. He's the man who will take over for Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett when he leaves office, if he's appointed and confirmed as the ambassador to Luxembourg. So what do we need in the next Milwaukee mayor? What should be the focus? We're at 1-800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org. Well, Cavalier Johnson, we have been talking about COVID. We have been talking about reckless driving. I wonder how important you feel it is to address the homicide rate and other violent crime in Milwaukee.
Yeah, it is absolutely important. You know, Milwaukee is not an island when it comes to the uptick in violent crime and namely homicide. As we all know, you and your listeners, that when COVID set in last year, we saw spikes in major cities across the United States, and Milwaukee was no exception. I do think it's important to recognize the fact that when Milwaukee launched our Office of Violence Prevention, or rather relaunched it, that office, in conjunction with the police and our community partners, had a pretty big impact on homicides and violent crime in the city. As a matter of fact, for 4 years leading up into COVID, we had seen homicides go on a downward trend in Milwaukee. And, you know, this is something that's near and dear and important to me because every single year, you know, I attend the vigil for homicide victims at the close of the year. And so to see that number tick down and then when COVID set in to see those numbers tick up is problematic. I think that, you know, for me, in the position that I'm in now, my position as acting mayor when that time comes, and hopefully, again, if the people will elect me as permanent mayor of the city of Milwaukee, my focus is going to be addressing these sort of issues at their root. And I think that one of the key root causes here is to make sure that people have opportunities available to them. You know, they have opportunities for family supporting jobs in the neighborhoods where they live. And if they're not working in the neighborhoods where they live, where they're living, finally making the connection that we've been hearing about for years, including the time that I worked in workforce development, where you've got a lot of people who live in the city of Milwaukee who are unemployed or underemployed, working a number of jobs or working in jobs that pay relatively low wages. And in communities immediately surrounding Milwaukee, whether it's the inner ring suburbs sometimes or it's the outer ring suburbs in the Wild Counties, there are employers who complain that, hey, we don't have access to a large enough workforce pool in order to fill the jobs that we have, and many of those jobs are family-supporting ones. Well, let's work in order to make sure that we can connect the two because it's good. It's a win-win-win for everybody. It's a win for those employers because now they've got access to a larger workforce pool. It's a win for those employees because now they've got opportunities for family-supporting jobs. They can have some stability in their lives. They can have some stability in their neighborhoods, buy their homes and all that, making our neighborhoods less porous and less susceptible to crime. And that is a win for our community overall because crime and the other effects of it will go down. So those are things that I'll be focusing on as mayor.
So I know you helped create the Millennial Task Force. As you mentioned, this is an issue you've been working on. We spoke with Chair Michaela Ellison recently to discuss some of their findings.
I think that we really need to have a stronger connection between our schools, our public schools, and our local colleges to really make sure that people understand what the next step can be. But then aside of that, working with like Employee Milwaukee and some of the different trades.
So Cavalier Johnson, I wonder what do you think about what she said, building stronger relationships and connections with our schools?
Well, that's absolutely on par with what I'm thinking for the future. So it's not just, you know, creating.
Oh, Cavalier. Oh, I think we lost Cavalier Johnson. I think we will call him right back. It appears we just had a little hiccup on the phone there. So we have been talking with Milwaukee Common Council President Cavalier Johnson. He's in line to become the next acting mayor of Milwaukee after Tom Barrett is confirmed by the U.S. Senate. Goes on to become the next ambassador to Luxembourg as he was tapped and nominated for that post by President Joe Biden. Cavalier, are you back with us?
I am back with you. We lost each other. I'm sorry about that.
Technology. It happens. It happens. So, hey, I want to go to the phones because we've got some folks waiting to talk to you. Only a few minutes left. So let's take Tyrone next, calling from Milwaukee. Good morning, Tyrone.
Well, good morning, Molly. Good morning, Milwaukee. Good morning, Mr. Chevy. Tyrone W. speaking. We've met on several occasions. He's a good man. He's done a good job in my district on the northwest side of Milwaukee here. However, the North Ridge area still needs work there, of course. It's a long list, but I just potholes are terrible still yet. You know, the laterals still need to be worked on, as well he knows there. And he's doing a good job there. I mean, he's only one man, so I'm not going to drop the whole plate on him. But he's doing a good job, but there needs to be done more done by him and a lot of the others as well. And starting by eliminating some of the corruption from the top, you know, Fire Police Commission, and working together so we can get it done together, you know. Just like the Bucks championship, we got to work together. So eliminating the corruption and getting the people what they need. God bless you, Chevy, and just do the best you can, and we'll see what happens. You know.
All right, thanks, Tyrone. Cavalier, Tyrone was mentioning the need for potholes, for better streets, and then he also referenced the whole search for the next police commissioner.
Yes, absolutely. And I know Tyrone, and I appreciate Tyrone. And I'll say this about the lead laterals and even the potholes. You know, I am an enthusiastic supporter of what President Biden had put forward in terms of building back better as a campaign theme, and actually putting some legislative and policy answers behind that too. So right now we're in a position where we're building back our families and making sure that folks have the means to make sure that they can take care of themselves, take care of their families, having some money in their pocket. But also the federal administration is looking forward to making investments all over the country with the infrastructure bill. And we're looking forward to receiving those dollars. I certainly am, so that we can invest those dollars right back here in Milwaukee, improving our lighting system, addressing the pothole issues that you're talking about. And also being in a position to eliminate all the lead laterals in Milwaukee. That's what the infrastructure bill would do. That's why I've been so proud to stand up and be supportive of it. So, Tyrone, you're right on the money, and I'm right there with you, man.
And what about his thoughts on all the drama that's been happening over the next police chief and the police commission? What needs to happen?
Absolutely. So I have been pretty straightforward and pretty consistent in my desire to see the current chief of police, the acting chief, Jeff Norman, to be confirmed to that position full time. And I know that the Fire and Police Commission just last night put forward a process inviting Jeff Norman to be the sole candidate for that position. So I hope that at the end of the day, at the end of this process, that's exactly what happens, and that Jeff Norman is confirmed to be the next police chief. But I think that folks, your listeners, ought to know that, you know, the council, including myself, have been a leader on this and trying to push for some changes in the Fire and Police Commission. That's why I think in large part that the mayor introduced the three new commissioners, all highly qualified members of our community, who have taken control of the commission, and I think will lead the commission into a future and help to stabilize, you know, that very important facet of city government. I was proud to support them, and if, you know, the mayor is unable to or does not make the appointments to fill out the commission, that's something that is going to be top of mind for me when I take over the role, is to fill out the Fire and Police Commission and finally get us to 9 members, as the community has been asking for, that I've been asking for some time.
And Cavalier Johnson, we only have a moment left with you, but I wonder if you've spoken to Mayor Barrett recently and you have any idea of the timetable of what happens next?
I have spoken to the mayor, but he knows, as I do, that all of this depends on what the United States Senate does. So if Senator Cruz perhaps were to remove his objection to the approval of ambassadors, then this would go longer. If that doesn't happen, then potentially we're looking at a longer time period. It all depends on the Senate, though.
Sure. Well, Cavalier Johnson, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, absolutely, Molly. Thank you for having me.
Cavalier Johnson, the president of the Milwaukee Common Council. He would serve as acting mayor of the city of Milwaukee after Tom Barrett resigns. I'm Molly Stenz, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.